There was some excitement a few weeks ago around the news that prominent evangelical leader Beth Moore was leaving the Southern Baptist Convention. Despite having taught millions of fervent women of faith, Moore lost an astounding amount of credibility and influence simply by challenging the immediate past president of the United States during the peak of the hashtag MeToo movement. It was a demonstration of just how politically correct followers of the famous politically incorrect 45th POTUS actually had to be. But it also sparked wider discussion of the role of women in conservative Christianity, political or not. A blunt assessment of the Beth Moore narrative appeared recently in Religion Dispatches magazine, and I am happy to welcome the author, J. Dana Trent, back to State of Belief Radio. Dana, thank you for being with us again.
Thank you so much, Dr. Gaddy. It's an honor to be here.
Women leaders in evangelical Christianity are typically not very visible. Where is such ministry even possible, and what are the main problems as you see them?
Well, the main problem is something called the Baptist Faith and Message, which is a doctrine from the Southern Baptist Convention that all Southern Baptist churches adhere to. And what this doctrine does, Baptist Faith and Message of 2000, is it codifies complementarianism, which is specific gender roles for men and women with regard to household responsibilities, as well as teaching and preaching. And so any church that aligns itself with the Baptist faith and message is going to be unable, at least in theory, to assign, elect, call a female senior pastor. Therein lies the challenge for women within this tradition who long to be and are called to be and are educated to be preachers and pastors.
You know, I just have to say this. As I was listening to you say that, the definition of it, it just made me once again feel so good that I walked away from that. But pardon me for saying it. The Roman Catholic Church draws an absolute line between gender roles in ministry. So how is the situation more complicated in evangelicalism?
Well, obviously, I cannot speak strictly to the Catholic tradition because my background is Southern Baptist and then what I would call a more progressive Baptist now. But in the evangelical tradition, the gender roles extend beyond the priesthood. In other words, we're talking about a doctrine that informs the culture, that informs the household. And that's where we get into subjugation and the insidious nature of complementarianism, in that this particular doctrine, Baptist faith and message, extends beyond the church walls into the home, wherein, in heteronormative language, the male is the head of household, and females within that household are to submit to his authority. So in that way, we're talking about a doctrine, a theology, a historical construct that goes beyond Sunday. It goes beyond the walls of the church, and it affects the lives of daughters, young women, adult women, wives, sisters. It affects everyone because it's a 24/7 culture that women are living in and living under, quite frankly.
You're a Baptist clergywoman yourself, as you just said. Would you start by talking about why you initially welcomed Beth Moore's leaving the structures that she was so tightly identified with, and then felt she wasted the opportunity?
I did absolutely welcome her leaving the SBC and its monster publishing arm, Lifeway. And I say monster as in grand. I welcomed her leaving. It was definitely time for her, and I was grateful that she took that stand. But in my gut, I knew that there had to be more, and I was waiting for more. I was expecting more from more, and then came her apology last week. Now, the challenge with her apology is that while she asked for forgiveness in teaching this doctrine, in teaching complementarianism, since 1995, when she wrote her first book, I was 14, I'm 40 now, she said that she was not willing to take a strong stance on rejecting complementarianism. And I really appreciate her starting again this conversation about how intertwined and insidious the two are. Complementarianism and the Southern Baptist Convention, Southern Baptist churches, go hand in hand. So for her to take a stand in leaving the SBC, but to be unwilling to untangle herself from this very complicated historical and social construct is problematic. And it's problematic because there are women who live in households that are complementarian. And while Beth has the luxury of stepping away from it, perhaps in her own household or in her own life, there are women who do not have that privilege. Complementarianism is a very specific doctrine that identifies specific roles according to gender. Those are roles inside the church, like teaching and preaching, and roles inside the household. So they extend beyond the church into the home. In other words, at home, the male member of the household is the head of the house. He makes all of the decisions, and women in that household are under, I'm using my thumb to show, under his authority. At church, the same thing is true. According to 1 Timothy chapter 2, 12, which is the proof text, the cherry-picking scripture that complementarians use to reinforce this doctrine, and that is to say that typically, at least in the Southern Baptist tradition I grew up in, women are not allowed to teach and preach, and certainly not allowed to teach male children, usually older than 12. And so therefore that keeps women in very specific roles in churches, children's ministry, Sunday school teachers. But once there is any opportunity for what would be perceived as authority or power, the doctrine of complementarianism is used to pull away power from women and therefore their voice, quite frankly.
So what do you think it would have been more useful to hear from Beth Moore?
Great question. You know, one of the much appreciated responses that I received in conjunction with the Religion Dispatch's article was that, you know, Beth Moore needs grace and time, grace and time, grace and time. And I really hear that. What I would have loved for her to do is to nuance her apology and to talk more about her discernment process. It would have been helpful for her to say, I'm not prepared to take a stance, and here's why. X, Y, and Z. I'm thinking through X, Y, and Z. And I would have loved for her to acknowledge her own white privilege and that she can have a toe in and a toe out of the SBC complementarianism argument. That would have been very helpful because right now, as it stands, her statement lacks nuance. It lacks premises for her argument. She did not give us evidence as to why she has not outright rejected complementarianism. And the problem with that is that by saying that she needs grace and time to discern, my response to that is that she's been writing since 1995, since I was 14. I'm 40 now. And so she's had lots of grace and time to think through this. And quite frankly, there are women who do not have time. This is an urgent sometimes life-threatening construct for them in their own homes and churches.
Are there other evangelical women leaders who have shown the way that you're talking about, who have been more effective in their descent or departure?
Certainly. I think Jen Hatmaker has certainly made strides in this area. But my go-to example is Glennon Doyle. Glennon Doyle, Glennon Doyle's marriage to Abby Wamack, her extensive hard work, her nuancing of thinking through complicated doctrines. Now, Glennon Doyle is not necessarily sort of what we would call the image of the SBC when we think about that. She's not aligned with this particular tradition, but on the whole, she has many evangelical women supporters. And so her taking a hard, confident stance on these issues helps women see that it can be done and representation matters. That's why Beth Moore and this issue is so important, because there are daughters, little girls, sisters, and wives looking to her, looking to her books, her curriculum for answers to complementarianism. Mm-hmm. And that's why I would have loved for her to nuance her argument properly and thoroughly.
The dynamic that we're talking about right now must sound so antiquated to many of our listeners. And that's important because it creates a perfect breeding ground for abuse.
Yes, absolutely. The insidious nature of complementarianism is ripe for subjugation and abuse. Because if we can imagine it, being a woman in your household and you are submitting to the authority of a human, another human, a male human, who may or may not be healthy, who may or may not have good psychological boundaries and mental health, who may or may not have physical abusive tendencies, you are quite frankly, exposed and vulnerable to all kinds of abuse and assault in the name of the Bible, in the name of the Bible, because the male head of the household is free to use that doctrine and proof text the Bible to support his claim that he is in charge and all women in the household and in the church should submit to him. We have seen this over and over in the SBC assault and abuse allegations. We have seen this in a smaller context within individual households where women are abused in the name of complementarianism. It is ripe, toxic for environment for abuse.
More broadly, I was struck by the way Beth Moore was basically shunned after a pretty mild statement against the 45th president in the context of the hashtag MeToo movement. That level of blind followership gets people in trouble when it's applied to faith leaders. Never mind a political one. What are your thoughts about that?
Well, I'm a professor of critical thinking at Wake Tech Community College, and so my answer is always critical thinking. Folks have got to dig deep. They have to provide evidence for their claims, and they have to consider all angles of the argument. And so you're exactly right in that there was a quote-unquote blind following of Beth Moore, and she was shunned after her 2016 statements against President Trump throughout 2017 and 19, as well as her statements for hashtag Me Too. The challenge in this, of course, it led to a $1.8 million loss for Lifeway. So it was financially costly for her. But I'll go back to privilege, right? She is a woman who has resources and support and could go to the next life-giving ministry. Right now, she's partnering with Tyndale Publisher. And so as a writer, of course, I'm interested in what that trajectory will look like. But think about the women for whom, if they have statements against President Trump or they have statements against, the Me Too abuse allegations, they have no support. There is tremendous fallout and no one is going to pay their bills. And so this is extremely costly for women who speak out, who do not have the safety net that she has in place.
Yeah. Going forward, I can't help but wonder if there's any hope of much of evangelical Christianity coming to terms with the corner it has painted itself into, both politically and in gender terms. Even the campaign to deny the reality of transgender identity connects to this rigid dogma of men leading and women following, because you need men and women for that power dynamic to even exist. Am I reaching too far here?
No, that is not a bridge too far. And Religion Dispatch's senior correspondent Chrissy Stroop, who writes on trans issues, has talked about evangelicals losing the grip of their narrative because of the very thing that you have just mentioned. The evangelical narrative is dependent upon this binary language and construct of gender. Without it, there is no power and authority. So of course, they want to hold on to the power and authority. And to be quite frank, white women help them do that by not denouncing complementarianism.
J. Dana Trent is an ordained Baptist clergywoman who teaches world religions at Wake Technical Community College. Her most recent book is, and I love the title, Desert First, Preparing for Death While Savoring Life. We'll link to Dana's Religion Dispatch's article. It's titled, Dear Beth Moore, Your Apology for Complementarianism Reeks of Complementarianism, from stateofbelief.com. Dana, it's really good to have you back with us. I think every once in a while we just need to get together and talk about something. And thanks for making time to be with us again today for State of Belief Radio.
It's my honor, Dr. Gaddy. Thank you so much for having me.